So let me review a little bit where we are this week in our reading. Some of you might already know this. We started a couple weeks ago. Zach got us kicked off to read the Bible in a year, which is a good goal to have. And a lot of churches do it. We've done it many times. And the goal is not to just check it off a list where it's like, okay, I want to have this habit. And it, you kind of begrudgingly do it just like exercise and dieting and those kind of things. It's so much more important and vital. And I think this message today is going to kind of lean into that a little bit. But if you haven't had the chance, there's lists out there that you can follow, bookmarks for each week that you can follow along. And if you haven't been following, just take this week's, and it's Monday to Friday. Read those passages and just start whatever day you're on. And if you get behind, don't get stressed out. Just go with whatever day that we're on. There's a week-long one. There's a month-long one. There's the whole year if you want to see the big picture. But I want to encourage you to keep up with that if you can. I'm going to be jumping right in the middle of something we read last week. This sermon series I'm in, I'm trying to preach on the things that you have been reading throughout the week. And so we just kind of find out as we go throughout the weeks where we're going to land. I'm going to be around Mark chapter 8 today. If you've been reading Mark is like a pinball machine of like stories. He's like, you know, Jesus is over here, and then he's over there, and then he's over here, bing, bang, he's doing this and that. And it's like one after the other. It's like hard to keep up. You got to catch your breath with all this stuff. And so when you read it, it's a lot to take in. And a lot of his stories start like this. And then Jesus traveled to this place. And then he traveled to this place. He goes to this city, and then he goes to that city. And in this instance, in chapter 8, he's getting back into a boat. A number of times we find him in a boat or traveling in a boat, and he starts to travel across the Sea of Galilee. Now, for Jesus, moments like this, I think, are always powerful. And I'll explain. Because so much of the time when we find Jesus, we find him in crowds of people, which is always good as well. When he's in the crowds and he's preaching and he's teaching to a lot of people, waiting or surrounding Jesus. But then there are these moments when Jesus has some time to catch up and to debrief with just his guys. Like just that small group, and this intimate setting on a boat is one of those times where they can have this and listen to what happens here. In Mark chapter 8, I'll start with verse 13. It says, then he left them, got back into the boat, and crossed to the other side. All right, we're in a boat crossing in the sea. So the disciples had forgotten to bring bread except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. It's a weird detail to include. They get in the boat. Out of all the things we've read, and the disciples forgot to go grocery shopping, right? Before they hopped in the boat, they only had one loaf of bread that was already in the bed of the boat, and who knows how old that was. So, okay, interesting that we should know that. So, noted, we got bread. It will make sense here in a second. Jesus has something that he wants to say to them. He has something he wants them to understand. Something is on his mind. So let's hear what he says. He says, be careful. He warned them. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. And they discussed this with one another, and they said, it is because we have no bread. It should make you go, that's a weird story. It's because we have no bread. You ever been in one of those moments where someone's talking to you, and your mind starts going down a path? Maybe a word that they say kind of triggers some thoughts, and your mind starts going down this path. I mean, you're listening to them, but you're thinking about other things too, and you start going down this one path, and so your mind keeps going in that direction, probably because it was already on your mind or something like that, and you totally missed the conversation that's actually happening right in front of you. Well, these disciples, maybe they must have been talking about this, or that's something that was been recently mentioned. They did, like, we only have one loaf of bread, and like we're hungry. Maybe they're hungry, right? And then Jesus starts to talk, and he mentions the word yeast. It's one of the words in that sentence we just read, and they're not sure what he's talking about. They're not sure what he means. It is kind of, a veiled, not quite in your face. So they assume they understand what he's talking about, and they start talking amongst each other. They connected the dots that they had already been thinking about, and they're like, we're sure this must be something to do with our grocery crisis. All right, he's talking about the bread. It's like if Terry's my wife, if she's talking to me and she says, did you catch what happened in the news today? And, you know, I'm listening like I always do. And I'm like, did I catch? Okay, what's she talking about? She must be talking about football. Okay, yeah, Dak Prescott, he's been throwing way too many interceptions. And like everybody, the wrong people are catching the ball. And like a catch, is that, because I've been thinking about football and I'm like, okay, I'm just going down. Maybe it's not exactly like that, but it's similar in the sense that the disciples hear what he says and then they're way off for what he's actually talking about. This isn't about the loaf of bread that they have or the food they don't have. But Jesus recognizes that his disciples aren't picking up a lesson, that he's about to teach them something and they are not receiving it. They're not hearing, they're not listening. Listen to what he says in verse 17. He's aware of their discussion. Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand after all we've been doing? Like, are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember?" You see, the disciples, at this point, they're not on the same page with Jesus. He's still got his mind stuck back on shore. Whatever happened back on shore, he's still thinking about what they just left. They had this big event, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but they just had this big event, a big scene, and then after that, there's this controversy that happened, and it's on Jesus' mind what happened over there, and the disciples, they'd already moved on. They're moving on to lunch, or the lack of lunch that they're about to have. They're worried about groceries, and he's thinking about what just happened. Maybe you've experienced this before. Maybe you leave church today, and everyone in the car, they're talking about lunch, and they're talking about what they're going to do with their friends or their you know, what's going to happen throughout the day, but you're still stuck back at church. You know, something was said, some conversation you had is stuck in your brain, and then you just kind of jump in the middle of your brain's conversation. You start talking about it, and everybody else in the car is a little lost, and they're like, "Well, what are you talking about? Like, what's you're on a different page, right?" We've been there. We've been on different pages before, and so I might be willing to give the disciples a little bit of a pass, except Jesus seems to pinpoint a pattern, a problem that he's finding in his followers, a tendency to miss the heart of his lesson, to miss his mission. What happens here is deeper than a trivial issue of being on a different page. Like I said, we've all been on different pages before because we don't all share the same mind. We're not thinking the same things at the same time. However, this little mistake the disciples made, which we can forgive, it was a perfect introduction to a deeper issue that Jesus has on his mind about them. Something bigger than being on a different page. It's a hardened heart. The disciples. So let's back up for a second. If you've been reading through the book of Mark, ever since the disciples have been called to follow Jesus, they've seen a lot in this short amount of time. They've seen healings and healings and healings and casting out demons and a girl raised from the dead, walking on water, Jesus walking on water, and twice feeding thousands of people with just scraps of food. I mean, to condense it all, we have miracle after miracle and signs and wonders that they've been present for, observing, watching. They've witnessed this. Most recently was one of those crowds that he fed. What was it? Some 4,000 people most recently. He fed with 7 loaves and a few fish. We're not talking about a sleight of hand trick that he performed for all that food, but miraculously feeding the mass of people, incredible that they witnessed. But it's what happened after that that I think is stuck on in Jesus' mind. In verse 11, chapter 8, the Pharisees came up to him. The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus, like they did, to test him. They asked him for a sign from heaven. He sighed deeply and he said, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given to it." We give these Pharisees a hard time. I mean, for good reason. Many of them did not have a sincere search for the Messiah. They weren't in this out of sincerity. They tried time and again to test him, to trap him, to find a way to imprison him and ultimately kill him. And yet, it was their attitude that Jesus noticed, and he was going to share it with his disciples. He was going to point and say, "You know that attitude they have? Don't be like them. He was going down that direction. He wanted to teach them. Why? Why would he want to warn his disciples about being like the Pharisees, his closest followers? Well, because we and they have the same problems as the Pharisees did. The same tendencies, right? Like, and you may think, well, the disciples are nothing like the Pharisees. They're loyal to Jesus. They're following him. And yeah, that's true for now. But how long until they stop? How quickly, if we were to point it towards ourselves, how quickly do we commit to Jesus and then lose our passion and stop following him? How quick does that turn happen? And it fades so quick. And so he needs to teach them. He needs to talk to them about this attitude of the Pharisees. And he says, be careful. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. He has something he wants them to understand. And he wants us to understand the nature of life and faith. And he wants them to grasp this, illustrated by the Pharisees. Now, why didn't Jesus just perform a miracle for these guys? They asked for a sign from heaven. He'd already shown he could do it. Why didn't he just, like, flick of his wrist or a word out of his mouth, shock them, amaze them, shut them up, whatever? But you know what he says? He says, no. And he does that a number of times. People come asking for a sign. He says, no, because you still won't believe. You still won't understand. All you want is a sign, and you feel like, okay, if I just have a sign, then I'll have proof. But all you want to do is that, not to mention that they were insincere and all that. But like, number one, you're ignoring the fact that these things have already happened. He just did it. Number two, you're just going to ask it again. And then you're going to ask again. And then you're going to ask it again. It's just the nature of things. Always want more. Well, and number three, under no circumstances does Jesus need to be validated by us. Let me ask you this. Under what circumstance does a citizen demand proof of a legitimate king that he is their ruler? The citizen says, you prove to me that you're my king. That's ridiculous. Only when the citizen is delusional or lost does he feel like he has that right. And even more so in this instance. In other words, Jesus is nobody's monkey, right? To do tricks and to perform. He is valid whether people believe it or not. And his point is that these signs that people are asking for aren't going to satisfy a person who's not willing to believe in the first place. They're not even going to satisfy a person who's sincerely searching. Signs and wonders, answered prayers, aren't the solution for faith. And these Pharisees, like us at times, talk as if that's just the piece we need. We just need, you know, that one sign, one more proof will tip the balance of our faith. And so back to this warning, Jesus calls the Pharisees and the Herodians, he calls them yeast, and he warns them about the yeast of the Pharisees. And anyone who's used yeast before, if you've ever done any baking or know that, it's this pervasive ingredient, this very influential ingredient, and you put a little bit in there and it saturates the whole batch of dough with its influence. And so Jesus wants to teach his disciples a warning. It's like, don't let their ways, don't let their attitude, their doubts, their pride, don't let them into your heart, because it's coming. Don't let it in. And this was their response. Their response was, oh no, he's talking about the loaf of bread that we have. He's talking about the groceries we didn't get. Can you imagine Jesus? He wants to teach them this thing, and they're like, oh, he's talking about... No. He says, why are you talking about not having enough bread? Do you still not see? Do you still not hear? Why? Are your hearts hardened? Church, does Jesus need help with feeding his disciples? He doesn't need, and listen to what he says in verse 19. He says, when I broke the 5 loaves for 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke 7 loaves for 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? They answered, 7. And I just imagine him going, am I talking about bread? Do I need any more bread? He said, do you still not understand? And maybe you're like me. Maybe you sympathize with these disciples and you're thinking, Jesus, man, ease up. They just misunderstood. Like, how many times am I reading the Bible and I misunderstood? I'm like, give me a break. Like, I'm sorry. I missed it. I think it only makes sense that we relate to these disciples. We even relate to these Pharisees because that's who we are. We are imperfect. We're all limited. We're not all-knowing. We're human, and we need to be taught these things. We need to grow into them, which is one of the things that makes Jesus such a good teacher. He doesn't hold back, but he goes directly to the point. Like, he goes right where they needed it. And in this moment, the disciples needed it right here in their heart. While the Pharisees are looking for proof, and they're worried about lunch, all those answers had already been given. I can take care of you. I've already done signs. And these are the things you're still kind of talking about. Why wasn't it sinking in? What was it Jesus needed them to hear? And what prevents us from understanding the lessons from God sometimes? He had to put his lesson to the side. It's like, I got a lesson to teach you, but right now you're not hearing it. And so there's another thing. I gotta pause the lesson and come to a different. Maybe we, of all experiences, how many times have we come to church or read the Bible and it's like, you know, it kind of hits us and falls to the ground? Like, we could understand what's being said, read it, maybe sometimes have even a struggle with that, but for it to actually penetrate any part of our life, it's like it just falls on a hard surface and slips off or does not absorb. Maybe it's a hardened heart. Seems to be Jesus' diagnosis, or at least he asked the question. He says, are your hearts hardened? Is there a wall or is there a barrier that's not letting this deeper truth come through? Something, you know, more important that you need to be soaking in? Which leads me to wonder, what might it look like to have a softened heart for us? What might it look like? Now, a hardened heart might be easier for us to recognize on the extreme end. Sometimes in the Bible it mentions a hardened heart, like we think of maybe Pharaoh. That's something easy to recognize. Pharaoh was described as having a hardened heart, and we could see God was trying to tell him things. Moses, he wasn't listening to God, he wasn't listening to Moses. The signs were all there, those plagues that were ravaging his people and his land, but his heart was hardened, and so he wasn't letting anything in. And maybe, okay, yeah, that's a hardened heart. Or you think about these Pharisees, who they were cynical, they were plotting, they were deceptive, trying to trap Jesus, and it's like, okay, I can recognize that's a hardened heart. They're not letting anything through. But as we're introduced to this notion that the disciples, his closest followers, might be struggling with some form of hardened heart, it kind of opens up a new perspective for us as we're reading and thinking. From that vantage point, we see a dedicated group of sincere followers, these men right on the cusp. I mean, they're close of something greater, but they're not cast off. They're not dismissed for their weakness, but frustrating Jesus because they're not there yet. They're not absorbing the messages. Jesus wants to teach them this lesson. He's got a lot more to teach them too. I mean, not long from now, he's going to be crucified and resurrected and ascended into heaven, and they are the ones that are left to spread the gospel. He's got a lot more to teach them. What might it look like to have a softened heart, to be ready to have a landing space for the lessons that Jesus wants to teach us? Well, I know that eventually the disciples, maybe with the exception of Judas, they eventually got there. Eventually they understood who Jesus is and what he came to do. I think they were able to look back, one of the reasons for recording all the things that happened in Jesus' life, to look back and to talk about, to understand the lessons of Jesus from a more mature standpoint. At some point, I'm sure they looked back on this day, that day when Jesus fed the 4,000, and instead of thinking about what they were thinking about, they were just thinking about, wow, miracles, wow, Jesus, power, and all this, and those rotten Pharisees, and the debates, and things like that. I wonder, as they matured, and they started letting these lessons land, if they started seeing that day like Jesus did. And I wonder if instead of all the miracles, they started to see that Jesus looked on that crowd and he saw 4,000 people lost, in need of their sins being forgiven. And those miracles just kind of, well, they were there, but what he came to do, what his purpose was, and what he was capable of doing beyond multiplying bread, that they stopped thinking about the debate with the Pharisees and him having to validate his title with a miracle, but saving people from the clutches of darkness and the teaching his disciples the truth and the grace of God. You see, if their hearts were hardened, they couldn't see in those moments what was important. They couldn't hear what was truly being said. But as they softened their heart and grew in their faith, it's like their eyes and their ears were opened, and they understood the message of Jesus and understood what they were called to do. And I'm not talking like it's some kind of like stage, or you have to pay your way, or like there's levels that you can graduate into. It's a maturity. It's a growing in your faith, and it happens as we continue to grow. One of my favorite movies, it's a classical Christmas movie. I know we're past Christmas, but one of my favorite movies is It's a Wonderful Life. You ever seen that movie? It's a Wonderful Life. Great movie, created long before I was born. I watched it as a kid, and let me tell you, as a kid, it meant nothing to me. Right? I did not want mom and dad to put that movie in. Right? It's like it's black and white, blah, 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 dialogue, and it's just boring to a kid, and I didn't want to watch it. It meant nothing to me. But how different things are today. For me, watching that movie today is one of my favorites. I see, if you don't know the plot of the story, go watch it, but I see this man who lives a life of sacrifice. Time after time, he's got to sacrifice. He can't do all the things he wants to do in life because he's got to step into roles and let other people do their life. And so he spends his whole life kind of in that mold of having to do what's right and not what he wants to do. And meanwhile, missing his life as it's going by, his wonderful wife and his kids. And he's a little grumpy in the movie. But he always does the right thing. He goes there, and he has a pretty good life, but he's missing it. And near the end, and kind of what this movie is centered around, is that he gets into this trouble. He gets into this big problem, and when he's in trouble, all those people that he served and all those people he loved in this city, they rose up, and they came to take care of him, and they loved him. And for me, I watched that movie today, and it hits right here, just the story of family and the story of community and sacrifice and giving of yourself and making the hard choices, the day-to-day grind of life. I don't know, something about it just hits me. Now, nothing changed in the movie from the time when I was a kid to today. At some point, I grew up. At some point, I was willing to open my heart and say, what are the messages that are coming in from this movie, like years later. It's a maturity that created a landing spot for the heart of that message. Now, I bring this up because I think many times we fail to soften our hearts for God's word, to find that there's a landing place, not just for the logic of it, but for the meat, the life change, the transformation. Those things. Because we're thinking about all kinds of things that aren't as important. We're thinking about lunch, bread. We're thinking about work and schools and the details of how each day goes on and the grind of life. And our hearts aren't open and ready, maybe because, and if we want to describe it with these terms, maybe because there's a hardening of our heart where it just kind of comes and it hits and falls to the floor. There are so many lessons that Jesus is ready to teach you, ready to teach me, but it's going to do no good if they aren't absorbed. This type of sermon is for people who are ready for something deeper in their faith. Obviously, the disciples were in a pretty good position at this point. I mean, they're following Jesus. even though they weren't completely understanding, they're in a safe spot, like following Jesus, they're doing his work, and we ought to give them credit for that. But let me give you a word of caution. That stage of faith that his disciples were in worried Jesus. You guys are doing good, but I'm worried about you. Worried, like, in the sense that he needed to tell them it's not safe for these lessons to bounce off your heart. I'm trying here, sitting here to give you this lesson, and you're not able to take it in. He was just trying to teach them, and it wasn't sinking in. When the lessons of Jesus meet a hardened heart, we are left vulnerable to the world. I'm not saying that It's a Wonderful Life like is a message from Jesus. It's just a movie. But I'm just saying that for some reason, I allowed that movie and its message to hit home. There was a part of my heart that was open. And maybe you've had those experiences where you do have a hardened heart, but there are times, there are instances where you're willing to open your heart and something comes in and it touches you in the right way and you're willing to change or you're willing to let it sink in. I want us to be open to the Word of God. Because if we read the entire Bible, but don't let it in, it's going to be frustrating at best. I want to encourage you to come out Wednesday. Let's talk about how. How do we soften our heart? And I'm not saying that I'm going to come ready with an answer. I think that's one thing, great thing about church and what we try to do on Wednesdays is to lean on each other to talk about maybe different ways of thinking about it or describing it, looking at Scripture to see how we can allow His Word to penetrate deeper. Why might we have a hardened heart? That might be another discussion. Why is it even that way? What are we protecting ourselves? Is it? Are there other factors at work? Ultimately, how can we grow? How can we learn to see and to hear and to understand the lessons that we're reading in God's Word? Let's do that together. I want to invite you to come out Wednesday and we'll talk some more and see if we can make that happen. Let's pray.